Teresa.
Hi.
As usual, timely. I have a question and I have a comment. The question is, what about the Nazis on our police force? How do we find out, you know, how many there are and who they are and that kind of thing? Because we don't, right now we do know about one. And my comment is, every time I hear somebody like Trump say, oh, they are going to do this or that to us, it seems to me it's something that he wants to do, or in other words, the other day, the people that say that want to do to us, and in fact are doing in the case of Trump. So that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. How to find out where the Nazis are in the police force? I would say that's beyond my ken at the moment, although I would like to find out that as well. We know that they're there. We know that from various incidents related in the press that the Portland police have been directly involved in incidents of racist intimidation. How extensive is it? That's hard to say because of the code of silence on the police force. And I would like to criticize that most directly. The code of silence is part of the white code of silence more generally. And I want to talk about that. White code of silence, I would expect someone at any moment now to call up and start some version of not all police. What about the good policemen? The white code of silence tries to say that Jeremy Christian, who screamed his most direct racial hatred, is somehow an outlier or a fluke, even though this happens every day. As I mentioned, 867 incidents of intimidation and violence just 10 days, within the 10 days after the election of Donald Trump. These things are not happening outside context. Right now, we're faced with a situation in which the alt-right, fully knowing, understanding the effect of their intimidation, reveling in it, intends to rally here in Portland. As I said before, what they say is fairly arbitrary. There have been reports, for example, that Jeremy Christian supports Stein and Sanders. It's just meaningless. Probably just, as I was saying, just because he didn't understand who Stein and Sanders were. But Nazis, when confronted on their ideology, will often simply deny that they are Nazis. It just depends on who asks them and who's looking at the time. The real message that they wish to promote is that people like me and people of color should be afraid. It's about intimidation. And so I'm also criticizing, not too heavily, but I'm also criticizing the unfocused use of the word, of the phrase hate speech. In a way, hate speech should be protected. Maybe it's the speech that should be protected. If anything is protected, it should be the speech that is most upsetting, if we were to have a society in which people can actually speak their minds. But again, a rally for whiteness is not an act of promoting an ideology primarily. It is an act of intimidation that comes in the context of many, many murders. And again, to do a reductio, let me explain what doing a reductio means, since I guess not everyone gets a college education. Reductio ad absurdum is what it sounds like, a reduction to the absurd. Take a situation the way it is explained to you and turn it around a little bit, put it to the test, and you can get a reductio. And the reductio of the Nazis' claims alt-right and the alt-Reich claims that they just want to have their time at the microphone, they just want to have free speech, is made obvious, for example, by the Malheur occupation, where people got together with their guns and took over a government area and held it with their guns and then claimed it was free speech. This is so ridiculous. It is so absurd because, as I said, one cannot imagine people of color doing the same thing and living. Not only did they live, but only one of them got shot, and that was as he was grabbing for his gun. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Al is on the air.
Hey, Teresa, how you doing?
Doing pretty well, thank you.
Are you aware of the incident that happened last Saturday night in California?
No, I'm not sure what you're referring to there.
A man yelling racial slurs and brandishing a machete attacked a black man.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure the listeners knew about this one. It's just happening all the time. It's getting out of hand. And I just don't know what to do about it. It's just going crazy.
Well, I'm glad that you called and said that you don't know what to do, because that's kind of what I want to bring up. I mean, as I was saying, the white supremacists want to now pose as an aggrieved party. They want to say, as Jeremy Christian was yelling, that they just want their free speech. And they want to pose in that way. And what they're really doing is armed intimidation. So what is the tactic that is best? Obviously, it is not possible simply to ignore them at this point. I believe that the June 10th rally was shut down by the so-called anti-Sharia group because they realized that they would be confronted by massive numbers of people, and because in the context of the more blatant racist murder, they would not look good. And I'm thinking in terms of their desire to intimidate. Their desire to intimidate would not look good. This is what we need to focus on. What are they doing? They are trying to bring up fear, and they are trying to frighten, and they are trying to get power simply directly by frightening people. That's what they're really up to. So what is the good tactic? I would say that we cannot afford not to show up. Now, what we do when we show up is important, because they want to appear as the aggrieved party. So there should be limits on the confrontation to them. I think the best confrontation might be massive and mocking, but not directly violent against them, because they play the victim card too well. What do you think?
Well, it also goes back to the conversation that these people seem to feel like they have permission now to do this. And we need to actually send them the message that, no, this is wrong. You do not have permission to do this. This is a hate crime. This is unacceptable. And so, yes, I do totally agree that we need to show up and show a show of support against these people, especially on this rally coming up on Saturday. Or is it Sunday? Sunday.
The 4th.
Yeah, the 4th. So I think everybody should show up downtown and just, I think the best thing to do would just be to stand around and be silent, because silence is so intimidating in its own right. And let them yell and scream all they want. And I also would like to see the police come out in the same amount of force and the same amount of riot gear that they do to come out for other rallies and marches. Do you think that's going to happen?
It'll be interesting to see what the police do.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I have to say for right now.
Okay, thanks for calling in. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Now, I cannot talk about this without talking about whiteness. One thing that vexed me when I first heard it was the phrase that all white people are racist. And I thought, why would anyone say that? And it took me a while to understand, because it took me a while to understand that whiteness is a false status. And to the extent that I am white, I am racist. I am, in reality, simply a person with mostly Irish heritage and a mixture of other races. And as I said before, the concept of race is not only fraught but false in many ways, but it's a political reality. So the political reality that I am white is a racist status. And the fact that I like to bring up that brings us into sharp relief is the fact that in racist apartheid South Africa, where white people held majority of the people in that country subject to their rule under specific encoded, legally encoded superiority statutes. The Japanese wished to have economic ties with South Africa, and I believe it was in the 70s, may have been in the 60s, actually instituted under South African apartheid rule that Japanese persons of Japanese ancestry were officially white. No one in South Africa or in Japan thought that Japanese people looked like white people, or that they shared a common cultural heritage. It was simply a way of saying that persons from Japan would be treated as equals, would be given the status of whiteness, and would be able to make their deals and have the protection of the law. Whiteness is a status. Blackness is a status. On that latter point, I would give you, for example, Ludwig von Beethoven, whose grandmother was Ethiopian. He is called Moorish. Prince Esterhazy called him the Spanish, the dark Spaniard, in German, of course. And if you read German texts from the time, you see that Ludwig van Beethoven was what we in America would call black man, and what they called Schwarzer. But the status was entirely different. It was not in the context of millions of black people being enslaved in that nation. It was a different context. It wasn't a good one. He did suffer quite a bit from his status. He was rejected in his in a letter from, I think it was the daughter of a duchess, saying that she could not imagine having children with him because he was too dark. But now Beethoven is believed by most Americans to be white. Why? Because he's a genius. Because we're thrilled by his music. Because his genius is undeniable. Therefore, what is his status? And paintings, even from his time, make him out to be white. But his life mask, and his heritage and the descriptions of people at the time show that he was a black man. And so if you like Beethoven, you like black music. Number call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and Steve is on the air.
Well, hi there. I just wanted to make sure you knew that the feds are bringing in officers to help protect the Nazis at Terry Schrunk Plaza, because Terry Schrunk Plaza is federal property. So we're going to have two police forces, the Portland Police and the feds.
Thank you for pointing that out. This is something certainly to keep in mind. Well, here's some related information. I was talking about who gets targeted for prosecution, who gets shot when they show up with weaponry, and who doesn't. And right now, more than 200 anti-Trump protesters are facing felony charges that could land some of them in prison for 70 to 80 years. I'm talking about the Inauguration Day protesters. And that, again, is from Al Jazeera. But I'll stop for a moment and ask if you have further comment.
No, that's all. I just wanted to point out that the feds will be there in force, so be careful.
All right. Thank you very much. Number to call, 503-231-8187. This is an article by Patrick Strickland in Al Jazeera. He writes, when Olivia Alsop traveled to the Capitol to protest against the inauguration of right-wing U.S. President Donald Trump, she didn't imagine that she would end the day behind bars and later face up to 80 years in prison. Thousands of people journeyed from across the U.S. to Washington, D.C. to protest on the first day of Trump's presidency, January 20th. During the swearing-in, Alsop was among the more than 230 protesters arrested when officers from the Metropolitan Police Department blocked off a large area and hauled off nearly everyone. Here's a quote from her by telephone. She said, "I am wondering if my 24th birthday next week will be my last as a free person. I've never in my life had such a painful and stressful experience. There are no words to convey the severity of this," end quote. She said, "Our experience in police custody that day was totally dehumanizing. We were kettled, treated like animals, and denied basic human rights and dignity. People were forced to urinate on the streets and denied water and food," end quote. The arrest came after black bloc anarchists and anti-fascists clashed with police. Pardon me. Officers fired rubber bullets and tear gas at protesters. Anti-Trump chants were occasionally drowned out by the thuds of sound grenades and smoke bombs. Left behind was the broken glass from the windows of cafes, restaurants, and banks. Declarations of resistance marked the walls and pavements. Make the Racist Afraid Again, and F Trump. Images of a limousine in flames later made it onto television screens and the front pages of news websites across the world. On January 21st, most of the 230 protesters and bystanders arrested the day before were charged with felony rioting, which carries a maximum prison sentence of 10 years and $25,000 fine. But on April 27th, the Superior Court of the District of Columbia returned a superseding indictment, which added additional charges for some 212 defendants, three of whom had not previously been charged, with new felony charges including urging to riot, conspiracy to riot, and destruction of property. Many of the defendants are now facing up to 80 years in prison. Many other defendants, among them journalists, are facing more than 70 years. Number to call with your comments and questions is 503-231-8187. And again, I ask, why is Tom's Auto Body Shop still open? And Deanna is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa. Thank you for this very important discussion. I wanted to just add to or amplify your comment about white as a status, which of course is right. And I wanted to just say that if we understand that all white people are racists because we have the status of whiteness in a racist society, then I think it may let people off the hook from thinking there is anything that we can do about this. We can't change our skin color. But what we must acknowledge is that we can and we must denounce in every opportunity white supremacy. And I believe, as I read someone who's written about this recently has said, what we can do is insist that every school classroom, that every place where we are public, we set up training to understand what white supremacy is, what the danger of it is, what a false thing it is. Anyway, thank you so much, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. This is very hard for white people to hear, and I think one of the reasons is a sort of reflex towards a reflex that really has to do with survival. And that is because, like me, my fellow whites are raised up with everything from schoolyard taunts to Tom and Jerry cartoons to Bugs Bunny cartoons. Racism is inculcated at a very early age, and it is also inculcated by the sharp indrawn breath, the turning away, the nonverbal gestures that even a baby learns. White people are afraid that someday we will have to pay for taking the status of superiority, which is transparently false. And we don't talk about that. That's part of whiteness. Not talking about whiteness is a very important part of white racism. And again, I am racist to the extent that I am white. And I cannot claim that I have magically cleansed my brain of the many, many facets of whiteness, part of which makes up my character. So I agree. To be white is to be racist. And that white supremacy and white terror must be confronted rationally, or it will never, ever go away. And, I'll just go to the next caller. 503-231-8187. Rebecca is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Thanks for this great show, as usual. I was out of town for the weekend and just opened the paper on Sunday over in Seattle and was horrified to see what happened. And then coming home to this area, I saw on the news that this guy, Christian, was ranting and raving the night before, the day before, at a transit center. And I'm really pretty sure that there was a young lady that said he had been doing that. Don't they have cameras? And can't you? I mean, isn't it you can pick somebody up for just being threatening? Do they have to kill three people or two people before they actually get picked up for standing and screaming such things at people?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, in fact, the police treated the man with kid gloves, and one compares that, for example, with the slaughter that has gone on by the Portland police versus the people of color over the years. Compare it with the, well, I just don't know where to start. There are so many examples. He showed up at a rally with a baseball bat. The bat was simply taken away from him, and he was not arrested. He was well known, and as the indictment says, he was known for his association with racist hate groups. That's what he was about. The fact that he is dumb enough to think that Jill Stein and Sanders were on his side is simply a way for racists to divert attention from the fact that he is enforcement for their hatred. That's how it works out.
Well, when I heard the mayor come out and say he wanted to cancel the rally, the next one that they're saying they're going to have, is kind of in my head that they just don't want to be responsible when somebody finds out and puts together that this could have been stopped if somebody had taken the time to stop it the day before.
He was allowed to finish drinking what he was drinking before he was arrested. It was totally a kid gloves treatment. The murderer was given every opportunity to act out. He threw his knife on top of a police car. Again, imagine how that would have gone down if he had been a black man.
Yes, entirely. And Teresa, can I just say one more thing before I go? It's graduation season, and as a mother, my kids grew up and stuff, but I'm so tired of looking at all the children dying in the mayhem of graduation season, and I just want to say every graduate that I meet, I just remind them to not get into a car with anybody who's been drinking alcohol, because I'm so tired of looking at these babies all getting killed, like this week, you know. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. We're talking about white terror. And Michael's on the air.
I want to know, is this the same rally as the anti-Sharia rally that the mayor wanted to cancel?
The anti-Sharia rally was to be on June 10th. It's not the same one we're talking about on Sunday, June 4th. The anti-Sharia rally was canceled by its promoter for Portland, but it is still going on in 22 cities across the United States. I'm glad you brought it up because that's the point I'm making, that we are experiencing a wave of white terror, and that is what whiteness is about.
Well, how does Sharia relate to whiteness? I mean, Muslims are not any particular race.
I'm glad you asked. Muslims are not any particular race, but they are perceived as such. They're perceived as non-white. And that perception is being exacerbated by people who are claiming falsely that Sharia, that the nation is in danger of being subjected to theocratic Sharia law. Which is a law that is extant in certain Muslim communities far away from here and has absolutely no chance of existing here. It's simply a racist and xenophobic fear-mongering tactic. So the people who are promoting this are simply promoting racism. As I have said, in a way, it doesn't matter what they say. That is largely arbitrary. What matters is the knives and guns and the various means of intimidation and exclusion, including economic exclusion, that makes up whiteness.
So the white folks will protect everybody for Sharia law. This way you don't have to worry about it then. Okay, terrific choice. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Yeah, I'm not fooled by the Sharia argument. That's just nonsense. They say that they're against genital mutilation. They're not. They are simply white supremacists, and they are against people of color. And Tom is on the air.
Yes. I think another component of racism that scares white people on a very subconscious molecular level is that black people are genetically superior than we are. And that scares people. And nobody wants to talk about the truth, and that's the truth. They're genetically superior, and what scares white people so much to admit that. And, it, you know, I'm white. I don't care. But that's the truth. So I'm going to put it out there. And maybe we should talk about that too. genetic superiority, which there's been studies at Cornell University about it. So I just want to put it out there.
Oh, that's a strange place to go, and you may be right.
Why is it a strange place to go? It's the truth. Why is it strange to acknowledge?
Well, it may be true, and you're right.
It is true. There's been studies on it.
There have been studies showing certain Eskimos have greater lung capacity, strength, and intelligence than any white person or black person.
No, I'm talking about the genetic level. There's been studies at Cornell, but nobody wants to talk about it.
And that's almost like some white guilt.
It breeds white guilt, and it makes white people patronize black people. Just say it. Black people are genetically superior on a very molecular level. But nobody wants to go there. Why not? You want to talk about the truth? That's the truth. Why say that?
As I was saying, the whole concept of race is rather fraught. And so how are you going to define blackness for the sake of the idea of superiority? It's like there's no need to go there, and it never comes to a good place. For example, the famous anti-imperialist Sandino had an idea that he was part of a master race, and his master race was indigenous Americans, what we call in the United States Hispanic or La Raza or Ibero-Americans, however you phrase it, indigenous American. He thought that the superior race was a mixture of Caucasian and indigenous American, and he intended to go forward with that. Most people don't know that about Sandino, who was revered for his anti-imperialist acts, rightly so. I just bring that up to say that it's kind of difficult to go anywhere good with that. But I appreciate you calling in with your opinion.
You are right. All right. Have a good day.
Number to call, 503-231-8187. And been talking about whiteness, been talking about racism, been talking about white terror. And when I bring all this up, as I was saying, it's very hard to hear. A lot of white people think that I'm down on white people. You couldn't be more wrong. This is an act of loyalty, if anything, to the people who, like me, are designated as white. And maybe it's wrong. Maybe I should just be saying we're all bastards, but I don't think that would be helpful. And I think that we can move forward. I think that the society can move forward by confronting what whiteness is. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Chris is on the air.
Hello. Thanks for another great program. And I was just wondering if they're protesting Sharia law, will they also be protesting encroaching Christian Taliban law as far as the Christian fundamentalists in this country pushing their laws onto everyone's plate?
And are you serious?
I also took a little trip down.
We're protesting the Taliban?
The Christian Taliban.
Okay. I'm sorry. I missed that.
Yeah, sorry about that. Christian Taliban, like Betsy DeVos and Eric Prince, and this new wave of Christian fundamentalists in America that are pushing their laws onto schools and onto people's choice. And just keep up the great work. And I was also going to mention that I went down the crazy trip of looking up that guy's Facebook page from the killer on Friday, and definitely a very unhinged individual. He also had posts about male circumcision, stuff like that.
Yeah, he's on about that. But, you know, there's a... the thing that strikes me about him is not so much craziness, is just he's just not the brightest bulb. And he gets things confused. He's not well-educated, and he doesn't seem to process very well. But he does understand the idea of white supremacy very well, and he believes that he's a martyr now.
Yeah, and he's pushed by people more intelligent and in more prolific spots than he is to do things that they have culpable deniability about. So, yeah, definitely scary times, and especially since a lot of these people have infiltrated all organizations from local police departments to federal agencies.
Good point. We're out of time. The music's coming up, and so I'm out of here. Thank you very much for calling in. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'll be back next week. I hope that you will stay tuned for more of the, what we used to call the Radio Zine, more public affairs broadcasting here on your community-owned radio station, KBOO Portland 90.7 in the greater Portland area, other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
It is KBOO Portland, your community radio station. A little over a minute before 10 o'clock. At 10:15, we've got Flashpoints on the air with Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11, it'll be Between the Covers. Today's screenwriter and author Todd Davies, who created the Arcadia trilogy of fairy tales, visits KBOO to discuss mythology, technology, and cooking with what you have. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, today visiting with author Robert Greer to discuss the latest in his contemporary cowboy series, Astride a Pink Horse. That's all coming up. First up, though, Chris Andre hosts Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentaries coming right up.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.